WLRN Public Media in Miami and Florida Public Radio. This is Decision Florida. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross from WJCT in Jacksonville. Donald Trump's win Tuesday night was helped by suburban and rural voters in Florida. They came out in greater numbers, Tom, than the traditional Democratic heavy locations in the state's big cities. Trump winning 47% of the popular vote in Florida. That's 1.2% more than Hillary Clinton. In a divided state, we saw a very divided reaction around the state as well as to the election of President Trump. This is Richard Pierre Lewis, student at Miami-Dade College.
The fact that he's the face of our country now, the president is supposed to be. He's supposed to be a conduit for the people. And the people that he's acting as a conduit for are frightening.
Another view, Danny Caswell was at a Republican victory party in Pinellas County Tuesday night. She says she came around to vote for Trump.
I actually hated him and Hillary at first, of course, I think everyone did. And then it was mostly just he started talking about things that he was actually going to do. So I ended up going from the lesser evil to, wow, I really, really, really am a fan.
So what do you want your fellow Floridians to know about your vote as the country and the state now come under Republican leadership in Washington and in Tallahassee? What are you saying about where you want the country and the state of Florida to go? Some say that the Trump election reflects a great disenchantment with politics and politicians in general, not listening to large groups of voters. So here's your chance. Talk to Florida from the peninsula to the panhandle, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or on social media, hashtag Decision Florida. The senators are with us here, Melissa. Senator Bob Graham, former senator, former governor in the Sunshine State, and former Senator George Lemieux is with us on the telephone. Senator Lemieux, I'll have you have the first word representing the Republicans. What did the Florida vote tell you as a Floridian?
Well, as was mentioned, Tom, in the introduction, there was really a split in Florida between the populated urban centers of Southeast Florida, Tampa, Orlando, and the rest of the state, except for the college towns of Tallahassee and Gainesville. All of the rest of the state voted for Donald Trump. So there is a divide in Florida. There is a divide in America between city and suburban voters and more rural voters. What Donald Trump has to do now is unite everyone. And what always marvels me about the United States of America is that after we have these elections, our elected leaders come together. I was very impressed with Secretary Clinton and President Obama both saying they wanted Donald Trump to succeed, President Obama saying he was going to do whatever he needed to do to help this transition run successfully for the president-elect. And my view as Americans now is that we all need to root for Donald Trump and for his administration so that we can all succeed together.
And sure, Senator Lemieux, so important to do that. Melissa Ross up here in Jacksonville. Let me ask you, though, as a follow-up. Last month, you told the Sun Sentinel that in your view, Trump's demeaning views toward women, his lack of judgment, temperament and common decency, in your words, disqualified him from public office. You called for him publicly to step aside and said you felt Mike Pence, now the vice president-elect, should have been at the top of the ticket. Do you still stand by those remarks?
Well, I stand by them. I made them at the time. That's the way that I felt. But elections have consequences. And even though those were my beliefs, I now recognize what happened in the election. And Donald Trump is our president-elect. And we all have an obligation, I think, and a responsibility to find ways to support him. I am excited about the fact that there's going to be a Republican House and a Republican Senate that will work with him. And I think that he's got an opportunity, like every president who's elected, to do a very good job for this country. And I'm hoping and praying that he is going to do whatever he needs to do to bring us together and achieve some real things in his first 100 days and in his first years in office.
Senator Lemieux, let me bring in Senator Graham. What does President-elect Donald Trump need to do between now and January 20th, Inauguration Day, to bring the country back together?
Well, I agree with just about everything that Senator Lemieux has just said. I think he is right on point that Donald Trump is now the president-elect. He's going to be the president for 4 years at least, and we need to come behind him because his success or failure will be the nation's success or failure. I think that he is going to have some immediate challenges. He During the course of the campaign, he made a number of commitments of things that he would do on the first day in office or the first 100 days in office. It's a very heavy agenda that he's committed himself to. And I think it's important that he try, to the best of his ability, to deliver on his commitments. One of the things that has caused so many people to be angry and feel as if government doesn't listen or care is that politicians in the past have said what they were going to do and then didn't do it and didn't appear to have a real commitment to doing it. So the spotlight is now going to be on Donald Trump to change that pattern and deliver on the many positions, some of which I agree with, most of which I don't. But they are the positions that a majority of Americans through the Electoral College have voted into place, and it's his now challenge to get them adopted.
And the number to join Decision Florida, 305-995-1800 from anywhere in the state. Senator Graham, in your book, America, the Owner's Manual, you lay out a set of actions people can take to, quote-unquote, fight City Hall or at least become more involved in the electoral process locally, at the state level, nationally. Now that the votes have been cast and we continue forward with this transition, there are themes in your book that I think are relevant to what we're talking about today, whether people supported or voted against Donald Trump. We're going to continue to discuss some incredibly divisive issues in this country.
Melissa, thank you very much for those comments about America, the Owner's Manual, You Can Fight City Hall and Win, which Chris Hand, a good friend of yours from Jacksonville, and I have been working on the last couple of years. It was fortuitous that the book should be published in October of 2016 in the midst of this presidential election, and now we have the outcome of the election. One of the fundamental points that we make in the book is that in our democracy, you don't have to depend upon who gets elected in order to make a difference. You, as a citizen in our great democracy, have the rights and responsibilities to personally engage and make a difference. And we cite multiple examples of instances in which a citizen or a group of people came together and said, we're not just going to sit around and complain. We are actually going to organize ourselves in an effective manner to make a difference. And they did. One example that I like to talk about is Mothers Against Drunk Driving. A few mothers in Sacramento, California, at least one of whom had lost a child to a drunk driver, came together and said, we're going to do more than just grieve about our loss. We're going to try to understand the problem and do something about it.
And let me ask you as a follow-up, Senator Graham, let me ask you as a follow-up. There's currently a fight going on among Democrats for control of the party in the wake of this sweeping loss. Who should next chair the Democratic National Committee? Who should be the standard bearer for your party? What are your thoughts about the finger-pointing and the second-guessing that's happening now in the wake of Secretary Clinton's loss, and who should be leading the party going forward?
Well, this current spat within the Democratic Party is by no means an anomaly. This happens almost every election season in the 48 or 72 hours after the election is resolved. People start pointing at each other and assigning blame and talking about what needs to be done to avoid a repetition. I don't have a candidate to be chairman of the National Democratic Party. I do have a suggestion of that what that person should be doing. And one of them is they should be listening. It's interesting to me that there were about 20 candidates, Democrats plus Republicans, who offered themselves for president in 2016. 18 of those candidates appeared not to have heard what the people clearly were thinking about the estrangement with government. Donald Trump heard it. I think Bernie Sanders heard it to some degree. But to me, the fundamental challenge to both parties, and I guess since they were on the losing column, particularly the Democratic Party, is to start listening to the people before making up the party's collective mind as to who its champion is going to be and for what principles the party will stand.
Senator George Lemieux, just about a minute left before we have to go to break, and we'll continue the conversation after that. But as Senator Graham talks about in his book about how one voice, one vote can make a difference, can get involved, we certainly heard that on the Republican side with Donald Trump in the last week.
Well, this was an election that shocked most everyone. In many ways, to me, it's a bloodless revolution. It's a transformation of American politics, a realignment, not on lines of Democrats or Republicans, but more really on people who have different views in life and different places in life. We've got rural voters and suburban, rural on the one side and city voters on the other side,
right,
and folks of different age and diversity on one side of the column and versus the other. So it's been a transformation in our country, and the American people's voices were heard loud and clear. What all the experts thought, what the media experts thought, what the politicians thought didn't happen. Something very different happened, and it's made a very loud message.
Conventional wisdom has been thrown out in the past several days when it comes to politics and politics in Florida. And that's why we want to hear from you throughout the state of Florida, from the peninsula to the panhandle. We want to hear from those voters. Did you vote for Donald Trump? Did you vote for Senator Bernie Sanders and then switched your vote? Maybe you didn't show up at all at the polling place. Why not? Tell us about the disengagement or the disenfranchisement that you may be feeling. We want to hear and tell your fellow Floridian about what you're experiencing. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800 throughout the state of Florida, from the peninsula to the panhandle. This is Decision Florida. It continues next from Florida Public Radio.
From Florida Public Radio, this is Decision Florida. I'm Melissa Ross from WJCT in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson with WLRN in Miami. Now, this election, Melissa, certainly has changed the political pendulum in power in Washington, but also in Tallahassee. Republicans remain the majority at the state capitol, and now we'll have fellow Republicans controlling both houses of Congress and the White House.
That's right, Tom. Now, Florida Governor Rick Scott has had a strained relationship with the Obama administration, fighting it on everything from Medicaid expansion to gun laws and emissions rules for electric power plants, for instance. On Wednesday, Governor Scott told CNN that he feels he will now have a partner in Washington.
But I'm going to do everything I can to be helpful to him. I want them to be very, very, very successful. Well, if this is exciting for me, I've been governor for almost 6 years. I've never had a partner in the White House. I'm going to have a partner in the White House that I can call and say, look, let's make this better for Florida.
That's Governor Scott this week after Donald J. Trump winning the White House. Well, what do you want from a Trump administration for Florida? What do you want President-elect Trump to do for the Sunshine State? What could Republican control in Washington and Republicans in control in Tallahassee mean for the economy here, the environment, education? 305-995-1800 or on social media, use the hashtag #DecisionFlorida.
And as we continue to talk about the election with Senators Bob Graham and George Lemieux, let's go to a few of your calls. As we begin with Felipe in West Palm Beach this afternoon. Felipe, thanks for calling Decision Florida. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I am a Bernie supporter who voted for Hillary out of fear of Donald Trump's policies. I watched almost all the debates and consider myself pretty informed. And some of the questions I have to my fellow Americans who voted Trump are basically with the building of the wall, the promised tax cuts, the increase in military spending, how exactly is he going to balance the budget? In addition to that, I have listened to Miami Mayor Philip Levine. Miami Beach Mayor, who talks about Rick Scott, who has banned the term climate change. And with this new administration, who speculation is that the head of the EPA will be Myron Ebell, who is also another climate change denier. As a Florida resident and citizen, Is there any concern as to where our country and our planet is heading with these policies? I believe Trump will be the first president in a developed nation to deny the fact of climate change. And I'm just, you know, as a concerned citizen of the world, I'm extremely concerned of what we elected for the future of America.
Felipe, thanks for that question. Let's get both Senators Lemieux and Graham to respond to that. Senator Lemieux, speaking as a former senator here in Florida, the state most vulnerable to the impact of sea level rise, what would you say to Felipe and others who did not vote for Mr. Trump, in part because they didn't like his position on climate?
Well, I think that Felipe and all the rest of the listeners and all the rest of us here in this country should proceed with an open mind and do our best to persuade the president-elect to the positions that we want him to follow. And I think he's going to be open-minded. He is not a candidate of orthodoxy. He's not a candidate that ran as a traditional conservative Republican. He's got a lot of views that are not traditionally Republican, like his views on trade, for example. So I think that climate change, look, those of us who are from Florida, especially here in South Florida, we know that the climate is changing. We know that we're having some sea level rise issues because we see the floods during the king tides here in southeast Florida. I think that Donald Trump is going to be a lot more open to those kind of discussions than maybe some others in the Republican Party. I think he's going to pick and choose the issues, and it won't matter to him on what side of the political spectrum they're on. He's shown a facility to do that during the campaign, so I would be more optimistic than Felipe is about that.
Senator Graham, how
about... Senator Graham, what do you think about that? You've been such a vocal advocate for the state's natural resources. Your thoughts?
Well, I am concerned at what the fact that the president of the leadership country in the world is now raising questions about the fundamental existence of climate change. It's not just a matter of what happens in any individual state in the United States. It's what's happening globally. If the United States is not more than a participant in a leadership position in the global effort to understand and effectively mitigate and hopefully roll back the consequences of climate change, then I think there's no chance that the world is going to act with sufficient urgency and aggressiveness to combat this challenge. This could be an interesting example, as Felipe had suggested, of maybe citizens getting involved and demonstrating what this means to them in their community. And we certainly have lots of examples of that here in Florida that could be then taken to the president and say, I know that you've stated that you're not convinced that climate change is occurring. Let me tell you and demonstrate to you what's happening in my community. And this is real. And if we don't act soon and effectively, it will overtake us.
There's a real local financial impact on this, as you know, both Senator Graham and Senator Lemieux. And local officials, at least here in South Florida, Melissa, have begun to take the lead because they haven't seen action on the part of Tallahassee. They haven't seen action on the part of Washington in order to adapt and reinforce to higher seas, for instance, along our southeast coast. The caller mentioned Miami Beach Mayor Levine, who led the charge for a $400 million city investment on a system of pumps and literally raising streets up in lower parts of Miami Beach. And so that's a real cost for those local folks that's not being shared elsewhere in the state of Florida, or for that matter, nationally.
I think we've had a couple of referendums in this summer and fall that indicate the fact that Floridians as a group understand this.
The solar amendments.
Back on August the 30th, yeah, there was a constitutional amendment on the ballot that relieved commercial users as residential users already are relieved of the additional cost in property taxes of installing solar equipment. 74% of Floridians supported that. Roll forward to last Tuesday, we had another amendment, which was interpreted as being anti-solar, although it was being represented as being pro-solar. And it was about a 50-50 vote, and it failed to reach the 60% threshold to go in the state constitution. I think those two ballot initiatives clearly indicated that Floridians understand the issue of climate change, mm-hmm. and they want to begin to change the sources of energy from fossil fuels to renewables such as solar.
And from the peninsula to the panhandle, the number to join us here at Decision Florida, 305-995-1800, as we continue our conversation about Donald Trump's election with Senators George Lemieux and Bob Graham. Senator Lemieux, a moment ago you mentioned that Donald Trump is not going to necessarily pursue a range of priorities that are traditionally Republican. Let's talk about one of his top campaign promises, a $1 trillion program to rebuild the nation's highways, tunnels, bridges, and airports, a massive infrastructure proposal. Already, conservatives in Congress are opposed to that expenditure and how it will be paid for. Do you think that is a realistic proposal? Are you in support of it? How do you think that aspect of the Trump administration will play out?
Well, I think that there's no question that this is something that he will want to pursue. He talked about it during his campaign. It makes sense. He's a real estate developer. He likes big projects. He talked about the state of our airports and our roads and our infrastructure, our seaports. So I think he's going to push for $1 trillion, maybe $2 trillion project, and I think he's going to get Democratic support. And indications are that he's already spoken to Nancy Pelosi about this being something that Democrats and Republicans can work together on. Look, there's going to be big concerns by fiscal conservatives, myself included, about what this does to the debt and deficit. We already have a $20 trillion national debt. So I hope that there will be some thought to entitlement reform. Now, during the campaign, Donald Trump said he did not want to touch Social Security and Medicare. That's completely unsustainable. That's where we're really seeing the growth in federal expenditures. So if they could pair that jobs program, that work program, with some entitlement reform, potentially that might make that, you know, balance or at least not be so devastating to the debt over time.
Senator George Lemieux along with us, Senator Bob Graham, the former senators in the Sunshine State, talking about the election results and what the Florida vote is saying to fellow Floridians. You can let us know, have your voice be heard, 305-995-1800. Let's go to the capital city here in the Sunshine State, Tallahassee. That's where Peter is joining Decision Florida. Peter, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I was listening to the discussion. Some of the reaction to the Trump selection is way overwrought. I've worked in campaigns since I was 10 years old, and I've lost more than I've won. And, you know, part of growing up is learning to lose some and win some. What we've got going on here right now, Trump was not my first choice. My first choice would have been Jeb Bush, a very thoughtful, decent man. Yeah, and next to him, there's a whole laundry list. It came down to a choice between Trump and Hillary, and it had to be Trump over Hillary. I mean, we've seen the woman's sale of access for the State Department. We have seen a host of things. Mm-hmm. In many ways, there's a paradox about Hillary. Her husband came to national prominence in an attempt to divert the Democratic Party from its hard left trajectory back toward a more centrist position. Hillary, by needing to outflank Bernie Sanders, has taken it further to the left, so much so that we actually had commentators on MSNBC on election night talking about the Popular Front, which those of us with memories longer than a week remember was the far left and communists being allied in various countries in Europe.
Peter, you're a veritable textbook of politics here for Florida, but let me ask you here, what would you like to see from a Trump administration for your beloved state?
Well, it's my country. I mean, we tend to think of certain provincialism. I understand that. I'm third-generation Floridian, and I would make the obvious, if only in passing, if the economy gets kick-started, there'll be enough people with money in their pockets to come visit Disney World. So there's your Florida nexus, and the infrastructure will make it quicker to get in and out of Mickeyland. But be that as it may, it's what happens to the country. As I said, I'm old enough to remember the colored-only signs on water fountains in this state. I remember going over, like most kids, you know, when you just learn to read and you see the sign, you go over and you turn the colored one on, expecting to see colored water. And I remember marching in a demonstration opposed to police brutality in Selma. I was originally a liberal. What happened was, in those
but
days...
Now voted, liberal, but voted Republican here in 2016.
Well, here's what happened. It started by the time I got to college. Two things. One, you had the failure of leadership of the people at Columbia University.
All right.
When the thugs took over the university.
Peter, we have only got so much time. We appreciate the walk through history. You know the state when it was Miami, not Miami, but we appreciate it nonetheless. A former Democrat, Jeb Bush supporter, who went to Donald J. Trump for president. You are listening to Decision Florida from WLRN Miami. This is Florida Public Radio.
And as we continue the conversation, Senator Bob Graham, what about the voters like the caller we just listened to, who started out as college protesters, became more conservative over the years, were not enthused about voting for Donald Trump, but in the end, that is who they pulled the lever for because they had concerns about Hillary Clinton. We are hearing from inside the Clinton campaign today a round of recriminations, blaming everyone from the media to the FBI Director Comey for her loss. What are your thoughts about that? And voters here in Florida that weren't really excited to vote for Donald Trump, but they just couldn't bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I have known Hillary Clinton since 1978 when her husband was elected governor of Arkansas the same year I was elected governor of Florida. And I have always found her to be a very decent, thoughtful, considerate, caring person. That obviously is not the way that her public persona has come across to Peter and many other voters in Florida and around the country. That's unfortunate. I think that, however, the things that affected this outcome were not tactical issues of the campaign, but were very strategic. And at the core of it was that people felt that they were being overlooked, disrespected, not listened to, and they saw Donald Trump as a voice for them, that he would be someone who had listened to them and would listen to them, and that their concerns would finally be met. As I said earlier, I think Donald Trump has put a very heavy load on his back by the commitments that he has made and the fact that voters are going to be now looking closely to see if those commitments are in fact delivered. If they are not, we may have yet another round of even more vocal disgust, dissent, anger about politicians not doing what they got elected to do.
And Senator Lemieux, as Donald Trump does try to fulfill his campaign promises, we're continuing to see extraordinary rhetoric from his political opponents. Your former colleague on the Senate floor, Harry Reid, the retiring Senate minority leader, issued a statement attacking the president-elect, and I'm quoting, as a sexual predator who lost the popular vote and fueled his campaign with bigotry and hate, saying he fears for the treatment of Latinos, African-Americans, gay people, Muslims, and young girls. Given this climate, how big is the challenge for the president-elect to unite the country and begin a new administration?
Well, first of all, those comments from Harry Reid are completely inappropriate and, in my view, un-American. Those are not the comments that President Obama made or Secretary Clinton made. And I know that Harry Reid's retiring, but we all need to come together. And if Hillary Clinton would have been the president, I would have called on Republicans to give her the same support that the good Democrats have been giving to President-elect Trump.
It's going to be a difficult change. It was a 50-50 election. He won the electoral vote. He lost the popular vote. We've had close elections like this before. 2000 certainly comes to mind. But Donald Trump will do well if he succeeds and, as Senator Graham said, delivers on some of his promises. If he can get people back to work, if he can restore people's faith in the American government, that it can work. There's a lot of people in this country that want to see Obamacare repealed. I believe you will see it repealed. Then the question will be, what is it replaced with, which Republicans will have to figure out. So, you know, he will have the chance to fail or succeed, and I think we all have to root for him. We're all on the same ship of state. We don't want the ship to crash. He's the captain now, and it's a patriotic obligation, I think, for all of us to support him, at least here in the short term.
Senator Lemieux, hang on the line. Hang on the line. Senator Graham, Melissa, and I will be back with your phone calls on social media as well. This is Decision Florida from Florida Public Radio. From WLRN Public Media in Miami and Florida Public Radio, this is Decision Florida. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross from WJCT in Jacksonville. President-elect Trump is now focused on the transition to becoming president. He will be sworn in as the nation's 45th president on January 20th. Now, in years past, Tom, Trump has actually rung in the new year at his state in Palm Beach. During the campaign, he even referred to Florida as his second home.
And speaking of that transition, Melissa, some breaking news here from the Associated Press that Vice President-elect Mike Pence will replace Governor Chris Christie as the transition team chair for the Trump transition team. 4.6 million Floridians are who helped propel Trump to the White House. So what do you want to hear out of this part-time Florida resident who will now be president in just about 70 days? What is it about your life in Florida that led to your vote? Or did you stay home this election cycle? Let your voice be heard here on Decision Florida, 305-995-1800, or use the hashtag Decision Florida. The senators are still with us. Former Senator Bob Graham, Democrat, former Republican Senator George Lemieux. On social media, interesting tag here that talks about the younger vote, the millennial vote, in fact. Out of Jacksonville, saying, surprising that my friends and Jacks are freaking out. Millennials cannot handle losing. The tweet continuing, saying it's kind of ridiculous, saying, chill out. what we heard Senator Lemieux from the Republican leader in Florida, Blaise Ingolia, saying that this was an election that showed the Florida voter is frustrated with federal government beyond belief. Frustration with Democrats as well as Republicans. It benefited the Republicans in this race. We've talked about the list of to-dos for a Trump administration. What's the mandate, though, for Florida and Florida voters as they look on what to expect from a Trump administration?
Well, Tom, I think the mandate isn't really different than it is for the rest of the country. They want to see a government that's going to work for them. They're sick and tired of the political class not getting anything done. They want to see jobs come back. This has been a jobless recovery of this recession. They want to see those jobs come back. They responded to what Donald Trump said about trade and about bringing good jobs back to this country. They're concerned about immigration. They want to see real efforts done there. They want to see the Affordable Care Act repealed and replaced. They don't like the Iran deal. I think you're going to see President Trump tear up the Iran deal. And maybe do that on day one. So I think Donald Trump is not someone who's shy. He's going to be bold, and you're going to get a lot of the things that he promised in this election. We'll have to see how our constitutional system does with that, because he's not used to the checks and balances and the separation of powers. But America has always adapted and adapted well, and I think he can be successful.
And the number to join us as we welcome your calls from the peninsula to the panhandle on this final Decision Florida, 305-995-1800. Let's go now to Ned in Miami. Hi, Ned.
Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening to the program, but I've not heard anyone address the question of Mr. Trump's legal issues going forward. And I'm thinking that you know, there's a number of issues, current cases going on, and chances are others to follow. And justice delayed is justice denied.
Thanks for the call. What about that Senator Graham, President-elect Trump, due in federal court before he's sworn in with regard to a lawsuit against his Trump University?
Yeah, unfortunately, both candidates carried with them some legal issues and possibly extended litigation over past activities. I would imagine that with the President of the United States, there'll be some way constructed to try to avoid the past becoming an inhibition to the president dealing with the president in the future. For instance, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a settlement out of court with the Trump University issue.
That's what his attorneys have suggested to the counterparties.
Yeah. I mean, it's frankly, it's in the nation's interest not to have the president of the United States, who's supposed to be dealing with national security, the state of the economy, to be in court testifying about events that took place in the past that may or may not have a legal basis for redress. I think doing this by negotiation is going to be in the nation's interest.
Senator Lemieux, let me ask you, though, this case with Trump University in court, the issue of Donald Trump not releasing his IRS tax returns prior to the election, other litigation issues surrounding Donald Trump and his companies, none of that frightened away the Republican Party. None of that frightened away the Republican voter or the Trump voter. So is he incentivized to move along with any of those? And how does that change, frankly, how the electorate is going to be able to look at a Trump campaign or a Trump administration, for that matter?
Well, Tom, I think all those issues are behind him. The American people heard all of that, and it was part of what they evaluated in the process of selecting who they would vote for, and it didn't resonate with them. So I think you're going to see him go forward. I think, you know, this is it's an amazing and humbling time for someone who's elected president. And, you know, he's probably already received his first briefing, a presidential-level briefing from the security intelligence advisors to the president. That's a I'm sure, awe-inspiring and in some ways gut-wrenching moment to really know all the threats that are facing the country. I'm sure he's starting to feel the weight of the office he's about to assume. So I have great confidence that, like our 44 presidents before, that he's going to take it very seriously and he's going to try to fulfill his campaign promises and do what's best for the country.
It's not so much not taking the office seriously. Clearly, he's going to take the office seriously, but it's these legal issues that surround him personally, even the IRS audit for that matter. Now, as president of the United States, will have his personal tax returns still being audited by the Internal Revenue Service.
So, you know, I don't know how that will all work out. The president is immune from any particular, say, prosecution while he's president of the United States. That's the only thing that can be done to a president while they're president is they can be impeached. So he's, you know, his companies may have civil litigation or there could be tax returns and audits. But I really think all of that will recede. I think the focus will be on what he does as president. And I think that's where the focus should be.
And Senator Lemieux, you mentioned repealing Obamacare as, of course, a top priority among congressional Republicans and the president-elect. Repealing and replacing it. What would you say to Florida patients here? We've had record enrollment in Florida under the website healthcare.gov. What is going to be the plan, do you think, in terms of finding another way, if that's what we end up seeing, for Americans to have health coverage?
Well, I think what they'll do is they will strip away the bureaucracy and the thousands of pages of legislation and regulations that have come with the Affordable Care Act, which has not resulted in lower premiums. We're seeing 25% increases of premiums across the country on average this past year. I think what they'll do is they'll get rid of it, and they'll do something that's more economically driven, like giving money to Americans who qualify to put some money in a health savings account to go out into the marketplace and buy insurance and let the market economy work. That's what has to be done. If we're going to lower the cost of health care, we have to have
Senator Graham. Senator Graham, do you agree with that? Senator Graham.
Well, I think there are a couple of steps to try to reach a compromise. Clearly, the health care system that we had 10 years ago was not functioning. We had almost 20% of our people without any kind of health coverage. We had increasing cost, and we were declining by international standards in terms of the quality of health care. I think the first step is to ask, what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to get 90% of Americans covered by insurance? Are we trying to keep costs from increasing more than X percent a year? So you set some goals. Then second is you agree that the debate will take place over quantifiable, verifiable statistics rather than emotion and attempts to deceive. Those were essentially the two steps that were used back in the early 80s when there was the last major reform of Social Security, and I think they would serve us well as we look to a new approach to health care.
Senator Graham, a question from Twitter that I think you're uniquely qualified as a former governor of a state and a former U.S. senator. Question from Howard, who asks on Twitter, how does a Trump administration sign an infrastructure spending bill that allows Florida to define priorities?
Well, we've done that in the past in terms of the interstate system. While the federal government put up 90% of the cost of constructing the interstate, it was the state's responsibility to cite where the interstate system would operate and to prioritize which sections of the system to build first. So the idea of having a divided funding source and a divided decision-making process is not unique.
And let's go to a few more of your calls from all across the state. Will in Jacksonville on the line with us here on Decision Florida. Hey, Will, good afternoon. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to call in. Like an earlier caller, I was a Bernie Sanders supporter. I was an early Obama supporter in 2008 in the Canvas Forum back then. And I've just always, you know, I was a very reluctant Clinton voter this cycle. Just found her very flawed as a candidate, uninspiring, ran in what I seemed to me an exceptionally cautious campaign, lacking in bold ideas. I was just really disappointed in her campaign.
So, Will, let me ask
And so you're saying that you were disappointed that she didn't have a bolder, more progressive agenda, I suppose?
Yeah, just been lacking any sort of central vision and central idea for where she wanted to take the country. I really never felt like that message was transmitted by her campaign.
Senator Graham, do you agree with that? And what about voters who responded to Donald Trump's messages? Senator Lemieux said a very plain-spoken one.
I think you start with an electorate that was ready for change. And was not demanding a great deal of details as to what that change would include. The example that we just talked about in healthcare, where basically Mr. Trump's plan is repeal Obamacare and replace it, period. And that seemed to be enough for a substantial number of Americans. I think that now the challenge is going to be to develop the consensus among the American people and with their elected representatives in Washington to be able to execute on these rather general commitments that have been made. Maybe Mrs. Clinton made a mistake by being too specific. She had hundreds of pages of policy papers that were developed in her name, most of which were probably read by the people who wrote them and a few others. but did not penetrate.
I think you're right about that.
Did not penetrate to the American people.
Some of those few others may have been public radio listeners, though, odds are. Yeah. Lord, as
or more likely announcers.
Could have been. I may have to plead guilty to a few of those, Senator Graham. Let's get to this here. You are listening to Decision Florida from WLRN Miami. This is Florida Public Radio.
Meanwhile, calls coming in from all over the state to Decision Florida. Let's go now to Karen in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling the show. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I voted for Trump and just because I was disappointed about the Clinton Foundation mismanagement of the Haitian Reconstruction Fund. And also, and I think Trump will be better at the economy. And just like you said, we have nothing to lose. We got high crime rate. We got failed school. We got high unemployment rate. And so I think this is a chance for minority and for Black people and for immigrants myself, because I'm Haitian American. And to get better opportunity and just to get the country on track.
Karen, it's Tom
Thanks,
Hudson.
Karen. Go ahead, Tom.
Let me ask Karen a quick question here. How are you going to judge a Trump administration over the next 4 years, Karen? Is it going to be a pocketbook issue for you? Is it going to be relations with Haiti, for instance?
Well, for me, I expect President Trump will get a better relationship with Haiti because we got a meeting with him and at Little Haiti. He was the first candidate to come to talk to Haitian Americans. Nobody else never did that before, and he expressed his feeling about Haiti very positively, and he said, he promised he will be a champion for us at the White House. So
thanks, Karen. Thank you, Karen. That's Karen in Fort Lauderdale. Senator Lemieux, Haitian Americans in Florida, a small but relatively influential voting bloc in this state, and they some of the data shows they broke for Donald Trump.
Well, Donald Trump did something that Republican candidates haven't done before, at least at the national level, and reached out to the Haitian community, met with the Haitian community here in Florida. He spoke not only to Haitians, but to African Americans, talked about the deplorable conditions of our cities and that he would try to do more. So I think there was a benefit to that, and I think especially with the Haitian community. And Haitians don't necessarily need to line up with the Democratic Party, and they didn't in this election. And now it's for Donald Trump to make some inroads. And there's a lot that can be done with Haitian Americans here in this country, and there can be a lot that can be done with Haiti, which has been a disaster, unfortunately, in our policy towards them.
We only have
I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
About 30 seconds left. Senator Graham, I want to give you the last word to this tweet question. How do we all take the high road?
We take the high road first by coming together. Half the country voted for Secretary Clinton, half voted for Mr. Trump. We now need to have 100% red, white, and blue for the United States. And second, we need to lower the rhetoric. There were too many harsh words, not enough thoughtful discussion about things that are really going to be important to the American people.
Senator Bob Graham along with us and Senator George Lemieux, thank you each for your time here this afternoon.
And that's our program for today. We invite you to join us on social media. Share your experience this political season with us. Use the hashtag #DecisionFlorida and download a podcast of this program at iTunes. Search Decision Florida.
Decision Florida is produced by WLRN Public Media in Miami by Julia Duba. Polly Landis is our booking producer. Katie Lepre, our phone screener today. Jason Zapka, our technical director.
With engineering help from Charles Michaels, WLRN's program director is Peter Mertz. We also received production help this week from WJCT in Jacksonville and WMFE in Orlando. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. This special program from Florida Public Radio has been a presentation of WLRN Public Media in Miami. Thanks for listening.